Bye-bye.
Oh, you tripping. I'm out of here anyway. Peace out.
Big thanks to Stephen Bardo for being on the show and breaking down college basketball with us. College Hoops coverage on The Score is presented by Samuel Adams, Wicked Hazy. Top of the hour is being brought to you by DuckDuckGo, Privacy Simplified. And this transition is being brought to you by Amy Kite of Keller Williams Realty Infinity. If you are looking to buy or sell a home, I'm telling you, Amy helped me out multiple times when I was looking to buy and sell. She's great people. AmyWillSellYourHome.com. Parkins and Spiegel are back together, and they're here on The Score. What's up, boys?
What's up, Lawrence? Spiegs, happy Monday. How the hell are you guys doing?
Happy Monday to you, fine men. Is six of the Sweet 16 a good number for my bracket and overall well-being?
How many of the final four do you have left?
Two. Is
no.
that good?
Yeah, no. No, it's not very good.
Troubles,
if you would have told me that you have all four left, sure. I would have said it's fine.
Right. Now, this is when you follow along. This is when you, like, relearn the maximum expected column or the maximum possible column in your bracket pools actually means something. Hey, look, my sister's in first place, but she can only get two more points. You know, those kinds of things.
It's one of the only sporting events that gets worse as it goes along. It's a weird thing. Like, the teams that advance are obviously better, and you've got juggernauts that have advanced, so it should hopefully set up for some good games. But as a viewing property, it actually gets worse, because if you do have a dud, you are going to it's most likely going to be in a standalone window, and there's not going to be other entertainment. And I never liked how they do it on Saturday.
Neither do I. I was thinking about that
really? Yesterday.
I do not like that at all.
I thought yesterday, every time I checked in, it was a pretty good game, and I ended up watching a lot of basketball yesterday. And I like the stagger. You think is it too far apart?
Yes,
you should have multiples.
It's wasted airtime.
It's two standalones to start the day.
Yes.
So if the first game is bad, or the second game is bad, you don't have another game. And they do it so that they can have, you know, maximum, you know, coverage all day long. I know why they do it. But Thursday and Friday are great. Like, Thursday and Friday are perfect. And I don't think I've got another sporting event that actually gets less entertaining as the stakes get bigger and as it goes along. It doesn't exist.
Yeah, no, I mean, a lot of them, when they're big tourneys or big groupings like that, and they winnow themselves down and you're left with one. I mean, there have been times where I've had that feeling about MLB, where I've had that feeling about the MLB postseason. If a particular matchup ends up being one that I'm like, I don't really, you know. So, but no, it's unique in this way because volume is certainly king. And I'll say this. I saw virtually none in real time of Arizona and TCU, which was apparently an absolute classic and a killer, just too late after a long weekend, man, I got to admit.
Yeah, you mainline basketball for 3-something days. You neglect the family. Owen maximizes some screen time. Like, hey, you want to watch basketball with Dada? You want to learn about moneyline parlays? Apparently, like, you're
would
supposed
you want
to
learn about cash out options?
Yeah, exactly. It's apparently on Sunday night. It's time for family dinner and conversation.
Are you using air quotes? Because I can't see you.
Yes.
Please tell me you were using air quotes for that.
You know the air quotes tone, Lawrence. You can hear that.
Family dinner conversation. And this was a weird one for me, Lawrence. Compromise. They were supposed to, like, compromise on what goes on the main TV. It was a weird night. So yeah, I had to be in and out on Arizona and TCU as well.
I think that there are some really interesting matchups in the Sweet 16, like ones that I'm looking forward to. Like, I am looking forward to the Arizona Houston game. I'm looking forward to the game between St. Peter's and Purdue. Like, I think that game could be really interesting. UCLA versus UNC. I hate Mick Cronin, but he's a damn good coach. And that UNC team, after what happened in the Baylor game, my goodness. That was a thing on Saturday, watching how that game ebbed and flowed. And then Providence is the team that I feel has been the most disrespected in the tournament. Like, they're just ignored. The disrespect is ignoring them. And them against Kansas, I think they can win the game. So I'm fascinated by that matchup, too.
You know,
go ahead, Speaks.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Danny. It's all right.
Well, no, I mean, to react to a bunch of what you just said, that the Baylor-North Carolina game, if someone somewhere wanted to write a college dissertation on college basketball in 2022, you could do it as an oral history of that game. Like, you know what I mean? Like, a ton of talent, really ugly game, horrifying calls, like transfer portal, stupidity, like dumb coaching decisions. Like, that game was, they were up 25 points with 10 minutes to go.
Yep.
Emotional swings when Brady Manek gets thrown out and you're like, oh my God, they're, all of a sudden they're toast and they go on that crazy run to catch up from 25.
I was talking to Bardo about this, how it was really frustrating to watch the tournament because there seemed to be a lot of poorly coached teams playing in it.
Oh, and you mean you don't think it was a good idea to run a pick and roll at Baylor's best defender on the final shot of the game and then pull up from 25 feet?
Correct.
That wasn't a good idea?
I don't think that was a good idea. I also think what you might want to do is you might want to practice, you know, going against full court presses and traps, because Baylor trapped the nonsense out of North Carolina to get back into that game, and that's what a desperate team is going to do. What amazed me about it was the entry passes of North Carolina. They are funneling you to the corner because then they've got the baseline and the sideline to help defend against you in the backcourt. And without fail, that's where the ball would go. Leaky Black would get the ball, and he'd be trapped in a corner. And how many times do you, as a coach, need to see that before you go, let's bring our big back to the backcourt, get the ball in his hands in the middle, and then see what happens, where you actually have options of what to do with the ball instead of dribbling into two defenders or the sideline or the baseline?
What was so funny about that was on the Best Selection Sunday show that nobody heard, hosted by me and Dan Muller, on Sunday, one of the coaches that he booked was his buddy Brad Frederick, who is the associate head coach of North Carolina. And Dan Muller, because he knows a lot about college basketball, he said ahead of North Carolina's matchup with Marquette, when the bracket got out, he's like, Marquette presses a lot, Coach Frederick. Are you guys prepared to beat the press? And Coach Frederick was like, yeah, you know, honestly, like, we haven't really faced a lot of press this year, so we haven't had to really install a press break, but I'm not too worried about it because we always are going to have two, if not three, ball handlers on the floor. And against Marquette, cool. Against Baylor, maybe the most athletic team in the country, evidently they should have installed a press break.
This is absolutely when you realize, and you should have known, and I should really do my ballots more based on it, who are like the talent collectors and who are the actual decent coaches.
Yep.
Right? Like Rick Barnes is a talent collector and an awful, awful coach. Bruce Pearl, his job has been talent collector as an assistant all over the place.
And snitching on other talent collectors.
Correct. And he remains an excellent talent collector down at Auburn, but he doesn't know what the hell he's doing once the game gets going. Meanwhile, Jim Larinaga, give that dude eight good athletes and he will make a run. I love how Miami plays. Every one of them is a willing passer, a willing defender. They have this selflessness going and this enthusiasm going.
And a 24-year-old point guard.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. That certainly does help. But man,
go DePaul.
He's a great story. I heard David Hall put it in good perspective this morning. It's Charlie Moore, right? Charlie Moore played at Morgan Park before Io DeSumo. That's who is the
wow.
point guard.
Amazing.
That's so great. That's a great stat.
Isn't it? That's the point guard for Miami. And yeah, they're going to take care of Iowa State, and they're going to give they'll give Kansas a run if they get there. I love the way they play.
Well, so I don't know if you guys saw my tweet from last night or if you've looked into it yourself, but I'm having major Salute Kansas City Big 12 tournament nostalgia because I'm going Friday and Sunday at the United Center for the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. and you say that they're going to take care of Iowa State, okay, it's going to be a home game for Iowa State. Iowa State's fans travel, and they buy tickets. When they used to come to the Sprint Center in Kansas City for the Big 12 tournament, they would outdraw Kansas fans. And Kansas, one of the best programs in the country, 40 minutes away from downtown Kansas City in Lawrence. And both of those fan bases are going to be at the United Center with obviously Providence and Miami. And so each school will get their ticket allotment.
But it'll be a home team. No, you're right. Last time I was there one time when Iowa State was there with Gorgie Jang, and they were very, very well represented.
Their fans are incredible. And there's so many of them, and they travel. Have you seen the get-in price?
No. What did it cost of Danny Parkins to get in? On the house?
Well, on the house for Danny Parkins. But if you go right now to your favorite ticket resale app and you just want a seat in the top corner of the United Center, and it's a great day. It's Friday night, United Center, and you get two basketball games. But it's over $200 just to get in. If you want to sit lower level on the sideline, cheapest ticket right now is $1,200.
Well, regionals are so great with four fan bases and
it's
four
awesome.
Bands. And yeah. I mean, that vibe is really, really cool.
Danny, did you happen to see the John Oliver on tickets in secondary markets?
I sure did.
Really great. It's complicated, but he's really good at making the complicated easy.
Yes. He's one of the best at it. I have a buddy who's a data analyst for one of the big ticket sites. I don't want to give out the company necessarily, but it was fascinating and talking to him about it and how it all works. And like that person that they had on camera with like the blurred out images who like they secretly recorded.
Was your friend?
That was your buddy?
No, that was not my friend. That's like the unspoken truth of the industry is that it's like, yeah. We know that the people that are buying these tickets in bulk are ticket brokers, but they pay the preliminary fees. We get that markup, and there's not much that we can do to stop it.
The idea of the part of the game that I didn't know, I didn't know that the bands were doing it.
Right.
The performers.
That everybody gets to institute their own fee. The venue, the band / promoter. And the ticket set.
That the bands were then buying the tickets and then putting them on the secondary market.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
man.
That's like, yeah. That
hey,
use Bieber
you know,
as the
those instruments aren't going to buy themselves, people. and then you need lessons if you want to be any good. I mean, how do you think Rick Camp got so good at the euphonium? You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Couple NIU tickets here or there. I don't know. Can't be responsible for that.
Uh-huh. So now we know. We know how Matt Spiegel has been getting down for decades out there taking the brother tickets and putting them on the secondary market.
Dude, there was a while there where I was John Fernita, the late great John Fernita, the music director at XRT. I was his assistant for a while, and all the tickets went through me. And I had moments where I'm like, oh, what should I do with? I've got thoughts as to what to do to these. And I'm sure that people in my position at other FM radio stations have gone down that path and lived like that, you know, but you can't. Danger.
I see what's going on.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, Lawrence, I don't know if I should even say this on the air. I don't know, but like, yeah, so I got the tickets. It was very, very nice, but didn't know which fan bases were going to advance. You know, I got them before the tournament started. I'm bringing Jack. I'm bringing my nephew. Can't wait to go. He's a huge basketball fan, all levels. We're going to have an amazing time. But when Kansas and Iowa State advance, and I know those crazy fan bases, I'm like, let's just see what these tickets are going for. You know, you can flip these free tickets for thousands of dollars.
Yep.
It was appealing. I thought about it.
Are you still thinking about it?
No, because I've now set it on a 50,000-watt blowtorch. So, no. But the thought crossed my mind. It was like, maybe my nephew doesn't need good seats. Like, maybe he's happy just getting in the building. You know, sell for the profit and then reinvest and buy back into the building. But yeah, man, it's a crazy business model. You know, people, if you got face value Cubs World Series tickets and you just are like, nope, I'm selling the 4-pack. To the 3 games. You paid for, like, college for a kid at a private school. You know, honestly, like the markup on tickets, if you have them at face value to absolutely premium events with incredible demand, is just insane.
Well, what would you have done if you'd been in that space, Danny? Because you're a longtime, long-suffering Cub fan until that point.
I had them. I went. I wasn't able to go to Game 3 because my wife's best friend, the maid of honor in our wedding, was getting married in Napa, in California. And on a Friday. So we went to the wedding, and her dad is a Cubs fan. And I was basically not present at the wedding, watching Game 3, and then running in and giving score updates to the father of the bride. And then I took a 6 a.m. flight out of California and flew to Chicago and took my dad to games 4 and 5. But sold my pair to game 3 and made good money.
Okay. You would have made sure that you were at least at one of those, right?
Yes.
Cause that's the thing. Like, yeah, you can make a profit, but that experience, like, you have to be at one of those games.
Yeah. And I ended up, I decided, you know, my parents had got me into so many great games in my childhood. It was lovely to be able to pay it back and go to those games. And made a pretty penny from the game 3 that I wasn't able to attend. But yeah, it was enticing to sell them all, man. The thought crossed my mind. I didn't have any kids at the time. My place in Kansas City was $800 a month to rent. Like, I didn't have any expenses. So I was like, oh, I'll just go to the game. I don't need this money. Little did I know, it could have been a down payment on a condo. But yeah, man. So it's crazy when you fall into those sort of things. But wow. I will remember going to that game 4, especially the first one, and walking in and buying the Cubs World Series hoodie and taking the picture with my dad outside the marquee with the big World Series on it before it. I'll remember that for the rest of my life. So it's the definition of priceless, but the thought did cross my mind.
The three of us as a triumvirate sat here months ago and put down some money on the Bulls to win the Eastern Conference.
I don't remember that at all. I don't remember
sure
that.
Sure did.
We did that as a trio, and I thought it was a good team building exercise. Honestly,
I thought so too. And let's never forget that Danny got in for double what you and I did.
He did.
Okay, carry on.
He did. Now the question of the three of us sitting here months later with more data points to make decisions on.
Did you cash that out?
No. I mean, no. We're at this point. You might as well let it ride and see what happens. My question is, what's more likely? The Bulls winning the Eastern Conference or them playing in the play-in series?
Well, they're 22-1 right now to win the East. And it's definitely more likely that they end up in the, you know, it would not get be 22-1 for them to fall to the 7th seed, given that they're only a game and a half up on Toronto, who they play tonight. So it's definitely more mathematically likely that they play in the play-in series than they win the Eastern Conference.
Did you guys watch Friday? I mean, look, Friday nights, like, you guys both have families. I'm not expecting you to necessarily sit there and watch it, but it was disgusting. Like, the way that they played against Phoenix, where you're watching Cameron Payne, like, do work against the Bulls. He's been great since he's come back from playing in China, but
he has. He's revamped his game and deserves a lot of credit, but still, yeah, he was just dominating them, rolling through the lane at leisure.
You never thought that the Bulls were going to win. There was never a point where I'm watching that game going, oh, yeah, they got a run in them that's going to get them back into this game.
Yeah, I did not watch it closely. I had it on in my office, and what was amazing was, like, and the, you know, the box score would tell the tale on some of it, but, like, it seemed like every shot that Phoenix got was easy.
Yep.
Like, it's, you know what I mean? It honestly, and the field goal percentages bear that out. I just pulled it up.
Well, they shoot, like, 55, 56%?
56% from the floor, 44% from three. But, like, when you were watching, it was just like, okay, they scored 129, but in an alternate universe where, like, the Bulls were hot and hitting every shot, they could have scored 160. You know, like, it really felt like they could have done anything they wanted on the offensive end every possession. Oh, we'd like a corner three. We'd like a layup. We'd like to get fouled.
We'd like screen roll with an alley-oop dunk. We can do all that stuff.
Whatever they wanted, any possession they were able to get. But yes, did not watch the entire thing.
Well, that is a special group, though. I mean, like, Bulls hung with Utah for three quarters and, what, 5 minutes before the Jazz pulled away last Wednesday?
Yeah.
And I know Phoenix ran and hid, but they have 9 more wins than anybody in the league in either conference. They've been like the only team at 50-plus wins. I think I saw this today for like 22 days.
I know, but they're doing a big portion of this, and this is why Cam Payne gets credit. They're doing a big portion of this now without Chris Paul. And seeing the Bulls not have an answer for Cam Payne was frustrating as hell.
Yeah, I can see that.
It's a really big game tonight.
Yeah,
it's a very big game, and I know Pat Williams is back, and we'll talk about that plenty. But this is the team. If they get past you, then you are really looking at play-in. And this has not been a good matchup for them this year. I know they've won, and they haven't lost them all. But boy, they have been tested, and will be tested again tonight. And you got to win. And nothing feels easy at all right now for the Bulls.
I just saw a tweet cross my timeline that, you know, us millennials, we sometimes just read the headlines. But if you just read the first line of this tweet, it could have been really problematic. It was from NBC Sports Chicago. White Sox releasing Tim Anderson documentary.
I was going to say bobblehead.
Yeah, documentary.
I was wondering, like, that's why they had the coach available, his high school coach available for media today?
Yeah, I didn't even see that, but I'm sure it has something to do with it. I haven't even clicked on it. I just saw it, and I was like, oh, man, that's gonna ruffle some feathers on White Sox Twitter, which has been very sensitive of late.
Man, we've reached, yes, they've got pretty good reason to be sensitive.
I know. I'm just saying it's a collective group that is on edge.
Oh, yes. they are
on edge right now.
Even close personal friends of the front office are breaking bad, you know, because it's a rough look when every big signing around the game leads you to the same sort of conclusion. But we will get there and discuss, that's for sure.
Yes, we will. We are guestless today, Lawrence. We were just hanging out. Triumvirate. What's a quartet? As a quartet with the mob.
I love barbershop triumvirates. Really cool.
Yeah. I kind of want to see all of you guys like with the classic barbershop quartet look now.
Oh yeah,
Shane with a hat.
A straw hat going on and the striped shirts and the bow tie.
And Tandy going boom, 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 boom.
Hey, Lawrence, do you know how many testicles there are in a barbershop quartet?
Wow. Yeah, I would guess 8.
No, 16. One's a tenor. Thanks, everybody. Good night. We'll see you later.
Is it Friday yet, Lawrence?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yikes. Really?
Want the other one I heard at a kid's birthday party yesterday?
Don't you have to stay home for the birth of your second child when we go to Vegas?
Need a rep.
What, you think Bernsey's going to have less jokes like that? He's going to have more. Going to have to hold him under control. Oh, that's right. Danny's not going. That's too bad. Well, at least I have a special partner. I have a special one.
Yeah, you have a partner you're friends with.
Hey, wait a minute.
Oh, God. That's the show, Lawrence. Bulls, Sox, Bears, baseball, oh, my, that sort of thing.
I ejected after that joke, but I'll see you guys tomorrow.
Yeah, it's a good decision.